Chapter 32. Tara Grayson had moved the coronation up. No matter that an army was encamped around the city, and that with their scant supplies already dwindling it was wildly inappropriate to have a party, Tara had decided she couldn't wait 2 months. Her coronation would be in 3 days, so Mama Kay had to come to the castle to meet the new court bard. She knocked on his door. He opened, squinting, and looked about as pleased as Mama Kay expected. She'd commissioned a piece from him on their last meeting, for the Queen's birthday. She hadn't mentioned the coronation was the same day. In retaliation, he'd gotten himself hired as the court bard, meaning she was paying for a piece he'd have to compose anyway. "Do you know who I am, Quogley Mars?" Mama Kay asked. As she stepped past him into his small apartment, he sniffed to smell her perfume. Quogley's sense of smell was as good as his eyesight was bad. Her spies said he'd even spent time with Alatira's royal perfumer. He hesitated. Then, "You are Madame Kirena, a woman of great power and wealth." Quogley's voice was a tenor so clear, it was a pleasure even to hear him speak. It was a pity nothing else about the man was beautiful. Quogley Mars resembled nothing so much as a squashed frog. He had a wide, fleshy mouth that turned down at the edges, no neck, a perpetual squint, and a small round gut like a ball. Rather than trousers, he wore baggy yellow tights on his skinny legs, and he had a tiny tricorn hat with a feather in it. He was one of the ugliest men Mama Kay had ever seen, save for a few lepers far gone in their disease. "I heard your new tale, The Fall of the House of Gunder. It was fearless. Beautiful. You should write more," she said. Quogley bowed, accepting the praise as his due. "I usually prefer the honesty of instrumentals. The pipe and lyre never lie, nor by their tones do good men die." An odd sentiment from a minstrel who's been chased from half the capitals of Midcryu because he can't stop himself from telling the truth. Which was why she'd asked if he knew who she was. At least he was capable of discretion. She smiled. "May I ask why you're here?" Quogley asked, squinting at her. Damn all artists. Their bribes had to come as introductions to the influential, in gifts of clothing or instruments, in arranging special concerts, and making sure they were well received. Of course, a bard rarely minded when some beautiful young music aficionado offered to polish his flute, either. But it all had to be discreet. The only punishment they could think to face for Mama Kay's displeasure was indifference. Years ago, Mama Kay had sent a gorgeous little flute case to a newly popular bard called Rowan the Red. The girl had given him some grossly ignorant compliment, which she wouldn't have if she were the educated young noblewoman she was pretending to be. Instead of taking her to his room and giving her better things to do with her mouth, Rowan had quizzed her and publicly made her look a fool. It didn't take him long to guess who might have sent her. When Mama Kay's most gifted wet boy, Durzo Blint, had arrived a few hours later, the bard was already writing a song mocking her and making wild allegations, some of them true. No one ever heard that catchy tune, or any other tune from Rowan the Red, but it had been a near thing, and since then, Mama Kay avoided bards when she could. But bards were too good a resource to abandon. They plied Mama Kay with every tidbit they knew and lapped up every morsel she dropped. Indeed, they often gave her new information, for bards were always present at parties, even if her other spies were not. But Quogley was different. Quogley's stories were rare, and the nobles regarded them as absolute truth. Other bards often repeated them. He was hard to interest, but once that interest was piqued, he was a bulldog. "Do you know who I am, Quogley Mars?" she asked again. Again, he hesitated. "You're the owner of half the brothels in the city. You're a woman who crawled out of the gutter to climb higher than anyone would have believed. My guess is you're the Sakage Mistress of Pleasures." "One of my girls has a small talent of foretelling," Mama Kay said. "She doesn't dream often, but when she does, she's never been wrong. 2 years ago she dreamed of you, Maestro, though she'd never seen or heard of you, and indeed, you hadn't yet come to Cenaria. She described you perfectly. She said a song burst from your mouth like a river. The river was the purest, clearest water she'd ever seen. She said I tried to stop it, but the waters overwhelmed me and I drowned. The next night, she dreamed the same dream. But this time I tried to strike you down before you could sing, but the song was unstoppable. And again, I drowned. On the third night, I swam. I think the name of your river is Truth, Quogley Mars. So I ask again, do you know who I am?"
"You're the Shinga of the Sakage," he said quietly.
Though she'd been prepared for it, hearing the truth spoken aloud frightened her. But this was why she'd hired Quogley Mars in the first place. She'd paid him for a flute piece, then had her informants drop hints to him of a much bigger story, the kind of tale Quogley couldn't resist telling. But the man was incredibly bright, and that made him dangerous.
"How'd you learn?" she asked.
"Everyone knew you were Jarl's right hand. When he disappeared, none of the Sakage's work was interrupted. Aegon's dogs continued training, the Nocta Himata happened, and there was no rush of thugs' bodies floating in the plith. The Sakage isn't an organization to put off a struggle for succession just because there's a war. You've been Shinga for more than a month, haven't you?" Mama Kay let out a long, slow breath.
15 years, she said.
"Always behind puppet Shingas. Shingas don't tend to die of natural causes.
So what are you buying? I'm guessing you want more than a flute piece."
"I want you to sing a song of Terra Grayson's secrets."
"Do you know what those are?"
Quogley asked.
"Yes." "Are you going to tell me?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"Because I've made a living telling lies, and you know it. Because the truth is damning enough. Because you're renowned for winkling out the truth on your own.
So if you can't dam the river, you wish to channel it. How do you propose to buy me off?"
"You want more than coin?" she asked, knowing the answer.
"Oh, yes."
"Then I'll give you what you wish," she said.
"I want your story. You will answer every question I ask, and if you lie in any particular, I will use your tale to cast you in a devastating light.
Now you tempt me to take my chances with prophecy and signal the wet boy I have waiting behind that curtain to kill you. A whore's truth has too many sharp edges. I will tell my story and not spare myself, but I will not share the secrets of the men I could destroy with what I know. It would be my death, and some few of them deserve better. I will give you more of my story and more about the Sakage than you could ever learn alone,
but that is all, and you will not tell it for at least a year. I have work to do first." Quogley's skin had turned green, making the impression of a frog complete. "You don't really have a wet boy behind that curtain, do you?"
he asked.
"Of course not." Quogley was a coward. Odd.
"Do we have a deal?"
He inhaled deeply, as if trying to smell the wet boy, and slowly he regained his balance. "If you tell me why you're doing this, I don't believe it's because of some whore's dream."
She nodded.
"If Logan Gyre were king, Jarl's dream of a new scenario might come to pass. Things wouldn't have to be how they were for my sister and me growing up, or how they are for the guild rats now." "Sounds awfully altruistic," Quogley said.
Mama Kay didn't let his tone anger her.
"I have a daughter. Now that I didn't know. I'm the richest, most powerful person in this country, Maestro. But Ashinga's power dies with her, and my wealth will be taken by whoever finally murders me. Having a daughter has cost me the man I love, and quite nearly my life. But as much as she endangers me, I endanger her much more. I need Logan Gyre to become king, because that's the only way I can go legitimate, and going legitimate is the only way I can pass anything on to my daughter except death." Quogley's eyes were wide.
"You don't just mean to be a merchant, or even a merchant queen, do you? You mean to establish a new noble house. How would you buy such a thing?"
"That's a tale I'll tell after the coronation.
Do we have a deal?"
"You want me to learn a queen's darkest secrets and make a song of it? In 3 days? That's ridiculous. Impossible. There isn't a bard in Midcryu who could do such a thing. But..."
He paused theatrically, and Mama Kay had to restrain herself from rolling her eyes.
"But I am no mere bard. I am a genius. I'll do it."
"Sing fearlessly, Maestro. I will make sure your song isn't interrupted." Quogley blinked rapidly, and he sniffed again.
"That's it. Head notes of bergamot and galbanum with a third I can't recall. The heart notes are jasmine and daffodil over bass notes of vanilla, iris, amber, and forest. Nuek Finn Bromar, the royal Alatearan perfumer himself, showed me that perfume. He said it was his queen's own perfume. No one else ever..."
He trailed off, his eyes widening. Mama Kay smiled, glad the gesture hadn't been wasted. A small tongue wet his wide, fleshy lips.
"May I just say, Madam Karenna, you frighten and intrigue me in almost equal measures."
She chuckled. "I promise you, Maestro, the feeling is mutual." Scarred Rabble was on time. He always was. This time their meeting was in the castle's statue gardens. Scarred Rabble wore the hundred-colored robe of the Hecatonarch, the long sleeves covering his ritually scarred arms and hands, the chasuble covering the lattice of scars across his chest and neck. He smirked at her.
"Yes, my child. Do you have sins to confess, or sins to contract?"
Tara Grayson favored him with a contemptuous stare.
"You blaspheme, coming as a priest."
"Out of 100 gods, there's got to be one with a sense of humor. What's the job, Your Highness? If people see you talking to me too long, they might think you really are confessing. They might wonder why."
"I want you to kill Logan Gyre. Sooner is better."
She itched her bandaged arm.
It was healing from where that damned shadow had stabbed her. But slowly.
Scarred rabble spat on the brushed white gravel, forgetting he was supposed to be a priest.
Yeah, right.
I'll pay you twice what I paid you to kill Durzo Blint.
Funny how you didn't tell me I was killing Blint until afterward.
It turned out all right, didn't it?
Only 'cause I caught him unawares,
Rabble said.
I thought you said you fought him man to man,
she said coolly.
He flushed.
I did, but it was a near thing, and you didn't pay me half enough.
Oh, so that's it. Bargaining, how tiresome. Name your price, assassin.
I'm a wet boy, as you should damn well know. I killed Durzo Blint. As to bargaining,
he shook his head.
This ain't bargaining.
How much?
Damn it. She'd worn high, thick sleeves to conceal the bandage on her arm, but it hurt, and she didn't dare touch it. Not in front of Rabble, who'd tell the Sakage.
It would be a hell of a job, wouldn't it? They say Duke Gyre killed an ogre 50 feet tall at Pavil's Grove. They say he's served by a madman with filed teeth who's ripped men clean in half, and a two-legged wolfhound, and 1,000 sword whores. I even heard tell of a demon that came looking to save Logan back during the coup. That's a fearful lot of fearful friends that man has, and a fearful lot of fearful enemies a wet boy would make by killing him.
I'll give you 10 times the usual, and I'll make you a baronet. With lands.
It was a princely sum, and she could tell Scarred Rabble was stunned at the amount.
Tempting. But no. The only wet boy who'd take this job would be Hugh Gibbet.
Then send him to me,
Tara snarled.
Can't.
He's feeding the fish for taking jobs Mother Sakage didn't approve, and Mother Sakage has told all her little chicks, no jobs on Gyre.
What? Tara asked. Don't you know who I am?
I will tell the 9 you tried. Fury washed Tara to her toes.
If the Sakage stands against me, so help me, I will destroy you all.
By the High King's beard, woman,
Scarred Rabble said.
We said no to one job. There's a big difference between turning down a job and being your enemy.
You will do this, or I will stamp you out,
Tara said.
That is a damn fool thing to say to a wet boy. But then you're a damn fool woman all around, aren't you?
Do you have any idea what Logan is doing this morning? No? While you're here trying to murder your allies, Logan is saving his.
What are you talking about?
The 9 says that you have a week to take back your threats against them, and to give you a hint of what kind of a war you'd be starting, they've arranged for a small diplomatic disaster this morning. They ask that you keep in mind that future disasters need neither be small nor diplomatic.
Ice shot down Tara's spine. They'd arranged a disaster already, before she'd even threatened them?
How did you know? She asked.
We know everything,
Scarred Rabble said.
Your Majesty!
A servant came running into the statue garden.
The ambassadors from the Chantry and the Lee Nought were both brought to your breakfast as ordered. The stewards tried to seat both of them in the place of honor. They're furious. I didn't invite...
Tara turned to snarl at Scarred Rabble. But the man was gone.